Recorded live.
Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hang on just a minute. I'm getting there.
Okay.
Been a wild day so far. How about you guys? Y'all had wild days so far?
No, yesterday was a wild day.
Exactly.
Yesterday was pretty nice.
Not here, it wasn't. We had a question about muting.
Yes.
Because Jenny was the one making little scratchy things last time. Is it star 6 for muting?
Yes, it is star 6 for muting.
Okay. And then to get back to unmuted, that's star 6?
Star 6 again.
Okay.
So,
boy,
okay.
I'm getting a lot of feedback.
Yeah, somebody's actually hitting their, breathing into their mouthpiece. So let me see. I've got all the power here.
He has the power.
I have the power. Let's see, where's that?
As long as you got the answers.
Now, I don't know about the answers. I just got the power, man. Oh, we've got a small group. This is kind of nice.
Yes.
It was a little hectic last night. There was a little bigger group.
Yes, it was. Yeah, no, I was on call last night.
Yeah, it was interesting listening to me. It's hard to do the questions, watch the chat, and listen all at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm terribly ADD, but even with my ADD-ness, that was tough.
Yeah.
That was interesting. Okay, so we've got some questions here. Let's see what happens. Venice. In an effort to show empathy for how my wife was feeling, I used how I felt about being rejected by my emotional affair person. The motivation was to try to let her know that I knew how that felt, to console her with no intent to hurt her, yet I did. I now see why and how and what I said did hurt her deeply, even though my motivation and intent were not to. How do I avoid such landmines in the future, Dennis? Well, Dennis, are you online here?
I am here.
Any time I think you use your affair partner as an example, that's probably just as good a piece of advice as I can give you. You're going to step in all kinds of landmines because your wife isn't going to have a lot of sympathy for you, nor is that all that's going to do is trigger pain for her. So I think probably your rule of thumb is don't use your affair partner as an example for her, because she probably doesn't even want to go there, but you already discovered that probably.
Yeah, I did.
You know, and I'm sorry that happened. That was probably really painful.
Yes, and that's why we had such a bad day yesterday.
It was our 36th anniversary.
Well, at least it'll be memorable.
No, thank you.
I'm always for making new memories.
Yeah.
And apparently you did.
Yes.
You know, and guys, believe it or not, someday you will be able to laugh about that. As strange as all of that sounds.
I don't think that particular thing is ever going to be something I laugh about, but in general, yes.
Actually, it might. That particular one may come up again someday, but it won't be probably in your context. It'll be maybe talking to some other couple who does the same thing, and then you'll laugh about it. But it's probably 5 years from now, so there's no rush.
We've got a ways to go.
Yeah,
we've got a long ways to go.
it's not funny yet. And
no.
You know, and the other thing I would say to you, Dennis, the road to hell is paved with really good intentions.
I've heard that.
Yeah, it's an old saying. And most couples get into trouble because of what I call right fights. And at one level, you know, we know our intention was decent, but, you know, the other person has been impacted by our actions. And so usually when that faux pas happens, what the person in your place will do is they'll say, yeah, but my intention was to help, not to hurt. And when you do that, then your mate feels a strong urge to kill you. So the problem is when couples have right fights, it's because one person's arguing from that perspective of intention and the other person's arguing from the perspective of fact and behavior and what it did. And those are two different conversations. So if she says, you hurt me, and you say, well, I didn't mean to, y'all aren't even on the same topic. So if you hurt her, what you've got to begin with is letting her know that you've wounded her deeply and that you feel terrible about having hurt her. And don't even say anything about what your intention was. Leave the intention out of the conversation, because every time you say, but I didn't mean to, sort of thing, or but that wasn't my intention, all that happens is it starts the fight over. To make amends, you just start with the amends about having hurt them. Later, if you want to talk about intentions, you can, but that's farther down the line.
Thank you.
Does that help a little?
Yes.
Okay. Hello, Miss Wendy. How are you
Hello.
Doing?
I'm alive.
Good. Are triggers always bad things? When I think about it, some of the triggers I have had nagged me until I had to look at them and would gain insight from what that particular trigger was telling me. So do the triggers perhaps have some purpose? Maybe instead of trying to push them away all the time, the thoughts, that is, maybe it serves a purpose to look at them. What do you think? Absolutely. I think that a lot of times within a trigger is kind of a grief point, a loss that you have to kind of accept. Different triggers have not all triggers are the same. I mean, you can't say that some triggers may actually hit something from your childhood, for instance. And so going back and dealing with those can be really helpful. Some triggers may be about insecurities. You may find some of that. Some triggers are just plain painful and probably serve no purpose. As the Serenity Prayer says, God grant me the ability to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference.
The trick
your challenge. Yeah. Your challenge is to know which ones you can and which ones you can't. But a lot of times I'll have people, we'll deal specifically head on with a trigger. And I think it's difficult to, you've almost got to have a third party to help look at that and pray about it and journal about it and try to figure out sometimes, especially if there's kind of a reoccurring trigger.
Right.
What that's about. Do you have any, do you want some more clarification or any more questions or comment about it?
No, it's just I know there have been, I can think of, it just seems to me that it felt like on some level it was supposed to be a healing thing in that, you know, why does it keep coming up the same particular thing over and over again? And it's when, you know, it's the same kind of thing coming up over and over again that I've thought, you know, well, maybe I need to stop trying to run from it and push it out of my brain and not think about it. Maybe, you know, there's a reason for it coming up. And usually when it's one like that, you know, there has been something in it that I needed to take a look at or talk to Denny about, or, you know, that there was something significant in it. I mean, a lot of triggers are things that I don't think, you know, I think they're just like some little firings in your brain. But there's other ones that come up consistently that feel like they have, you know, some significance.
Right. And you know, it's interesting. Like, I've got one particular trigger. I mean, I've got a few trigger points in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I find them to be, and I think everybody does. I mean, I'm not unique in that. We all have triggers of sorts. And so, you know, when those, for me, when I get hit with the trigger and I get the emotional flood, it sets off that emotional capacitor. I know that it's called an emotional echo. I know the emotions that I'm feeling at that moment really don't belong in this time zone. I mean, there's really something from my past with mine.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really, I think, important ones to look at and to try to figure out why they're there and what to do with them. So, don't know if that helps, but you really want to be able to get to those, you know, because they are, they're annoying.
Yeah.
And darn inconvenient.
Yeah.
Eyes open sex. This is a great one. I love this. One of my favorite topics. Recently, I asked you about feeling more connected during sex, having it be the rich experience for me that it was before discovery and multiple disclosures. You talked about eyes open sex. I'd always had eyes open sex with my husband. He was the one who had always closed his eyes over the past 36 years. Should have been a tip-off right there for me there. Now, when we do have sex, his eyes are open. So it's a problem for me to open my eyes because all it does is remind me of the fact that he did not ever open his eyes and why he didn't and how that makes me feel. I understand about mindfulness, staying in the present, but when you have a 36-year history, I like that little play on words, staring at you in the face when your eyes are open, it makes it a little difficult. Insight, please. You know, you may find, Wendy, that there are moments that you can look at him with your eyes open and you don't have that problem. And you may find that there are other moments that you look at him and that problem is there absolutely in spades. And my recommendation is if you're having that eyes open moment and suddenly that anger and resentment flares to the front, I would stop at that moment and rewind and calm down and then take another run at it. Back up and start over. I know that sounds probably really crazy. I'm sure that Denny wouldn't be all that thrilled about it, but it's okay. But if you, it's almost like you don't want to reinforce that negative aspect. I think that you can process with him. You probably have. And let him know how that makes you feel, because really all that's happening is his eyes being open is now the reminder. So I really, the other thing you can do is kind of try to spend time looking at each other with his eyes open intentionally and begin to be, you know, find the part of you that can be thankful that it can finally be different. And kind of keep a gratitude journal. Just write down each day, what are the things that I'm grateful about for this? Because, Lord, thank you that finally after 36 years, we get to have something different, you know? And so oftentimes doing a little gratitude journal will also help. Because you're going to have to intentionally kind of make that flip in your mind of, you know, to be in the present. And you may not be far enough past the hard or the hurt feelings, Wendy,
mm-hmm.
which may be kind of the pain. There's a news article I wrote today. I don't know if it's gone out yet. And it was about my son. We had an electric fence. We had sheep. And for sheep, the electric fence has to have like 6,000 volts because they've got wool. And that's a lot of volts. So I remember the first time he accidentally hit the fence.
Ooh.
And knocked him on his keister. And I was laughing at him. Then I hit the fence accidentally, and it wasn't so funny.
No.
But, you know, after being hit by that fence multiple times, the problem was, you know, I just couldn't hardly feel safe around that fence, right? And, you know, over time, that went away. I mean, I can play with that fence all day long, and I don't get flashback memories and all kinds of stuff. But for a long time, you know, anytime I saw that fence, you know, I knew it was off in my head, but I wasn't going close to it because it had knocked me down enough times. And I think that's kind of the experience you go to, and I think time does help a little bit. But also the gratitude thing where you begin to try to find what you can be grateful for. And Denny's ability to be safe is huge, just his ability to be patient. And now, what you can do is if you'll get your faces really close to each other and each of you close your right eye, then you can both have your eyes open at the same time, but it'll look like the other person has their eyes closed. So I don't know if that'll help, but it's just a weird thought all of a sudden. I don't know where that came from. Sorry about that.
Humor is very good.
Yeah.
I think so. I think it has a couple of advantages. Just a couple. Next question is, does the length of betrayal have any impact on the length of time of recovery? How does the discovery that my spouse did not love me when we got married or after until 34 years down the road affect the ability to heal? How do I get over the impact of him saying, no, I didn't love you then, but I love you now? He says it fairly frequently, and it's like I'm being knifed every time he says it. You know, there are ways to just make a big mess of everything.
I found that out.
Yeah. That's not good.
Are we seeing a pattern here?
Just a little bit. let's see, I was lost. I'm trying to, my spaces, windows is wrong here. Okay. Yeah, the length of time of one of the things that I always tell people is that if you had, like, however long you had the affair, the other person gets that long to recover. So I guess that gives you 34 years or something like that, Wendy. You know, and the other thing is, it's still going to take, it usually takes, regardless of the length of time, the 18 to 24 months, I found. The length of time, the severity doesn't seem to alter that very much. The thing that you've got that's really positive is the fact that that he does care now. And what's a bigger deterrent is if I've got someone who has been, they've had a good relationship, but their mate has gone sour on the relationship, and now they are really ambivalent about the relationship, the unfaithful spouse, that makes it much more difficult. But if I've got someone like the two of you where you were kind of deceived for 34 years and now suddenly he's there, I think it's going to take a while to feel safe kind of pressing into the relationship. But the main part is it sounds like his heart is finally softened, and in fact it sounds like potentially y'all have actually had a couple of good experiences in the past 2 years. And I think that makes all the difference in the world. That's the type of thing that I think really does help. Do you want to add any or clarify or say anything else about that one?
Well, I think part of it is that, you know, the disclosures have been dragged out over such a long period of time so that, you know, something positive happens and then there's another disclosure. And it's very wearying. and it's hard to bounce back after each one. You don't bounce back. It's like starting over, and then that's really frustrating because you think, okay, I've been doing all this work, and you know, we've been working on the relationship, and I'm back to square one again.
Right. Well.
But at least each time I hit square one, I have more perspective, I guess I can say that.
Well, and also the other way, Wendy, again, like I was saying on the piece in the marital bed, if you can write, sometimes just writing something like five really positive things that happened in the relationship are the two of you telling each other every day, two things you appreciate about each other. What it does is it begins to shift the lens. Do you feel like he's very good at sharing his feelings?
No.
He's
much better than he used to be, but no, he's not good at sharing his feelings. It's not comfortable for him.
Then one of the things you might want to consider is have him each day at the end of the day share a feeling with you that he had during the day. You're writing this down, Denny?
Yep.
Okay. Share a feeling you had during the day. It could be positive. It could be negative. It could be any feeling. And then I want you to share with her the first time you can ever remember having that feeling.
Unless it has to do with the
right.
emotional affair partner.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, that would be bad.
I'm not going there again.
Yeah. No. This is in childhood. So this would be a long time ago, okay?
Okay.
And then share something, then tell her something you appreciate about her.
Okay.
And then, Wendy, I would like you to do the same. Share a feeling. It's a ritual you begin to establish for the relationship. So share a feeling that you had during the day, a time prior to the marriage that you had the same feeling, and tell him something you appreciate about him. And then if you'll sit there and if you'll do that for 30 days straight, that can actually make a huge impact in a positive way. Because it kind of creates intimacy. He's being open about, he's learning how to deal with his heart, and that will help you. Boy Scouts honor.
Well, no, I understand, you know, that whenever he tells me how he's feeling or thinking, even if it's not something positive, like a couple of weeks ago he had said to me, because we were working on our 911 thing, on our stories, and we were talking, and at one point I said, you would rather have, you know, it's okay for me to be in pain. You know, you, it bothers you that I'm in pain, but you'd rather have me be in pain than you be in pain. And he said, that's right. You know, instead of trying to say, no, that's true. And, you know, I understood that that was true, and it didn't make me feel bad, you know. It was like, okay, he's being authentic with me, and I honor that, and I appreciate that. You know, so I know it's very important for me to hear what he's, you know, how he feels and how he thinks. Because even, as I said, even if it's not a positive thing that he's saying, it has a positive effect on me.
Right. Right.
Just hearing the process.
So, and that helps.
Yes, a lot.
Good. Okay. Here's another question by one of our prolific people here. This is really great. Y'all are getting an individual session today. You know that, right?
I know.
Well, I tried to pick questions, though, that other people would ask, too. So.
Well, you did good. Let's see.
I don't.
I have difficulty feeling safe with my husband. He wants me to feel safe, and I want to feel safe as well. He's working on getting better. We're doing the 911 course together, but whenever it comes down to anything that might be an emotional stretch for him, back to the emotions, or require his engagement, he reverts back to being contentious and tap dancing. How do we get past this? What do I need to do? What does he need to do? As for what he needs to do, you must be very specific. He is very slow and has trouble getting it. Wow. He always wants to know exactly what he needs to do, step by step. Okay. The reason that he tap dances and becomes contentious, believe it or not, is because he is getting very anxious. You know, one of the things we'll talk about in the 911 course is that intimacy always creates instability in a marriage relationship. And when you get to something that's an emotional stretch, basically what that's saying is you're beginning to get intimate. And so he freaks out at that point. Something, Vinny, that might be fun for you is to get a pulse monitor, like a wristwatch where he can monitor your pulse. And when you're interacting with her, set the pulse watch at 100. What you'll notice probably is that it goes off. Well, if it goes to 100, that means you've hit the sympathetic nervous system and you've gone into fight or flight. And I'm guessing that probably you've got enough kind of anxiety that you'll kick that thing off into fight or flight whenever you start going to that place.
Wouldn't surprise me.
And so if we know that that's ultimately what you're doing, there's several things that you might do that could help. One, take a timeout whenever the pulse monitor goes off, and then write your thoughts and your emotions write them down, and then give them to Wendy to read rather than trying to verbally express them. But if you'll let the monitor kind of be the pulse watch be the referee that lets you know when you need to disengage and go write it, you'll slowly begin to develop the ability to, I think, actually do it real time with her. Even though right now I think you're probably flooding emotionally and it's really hard for you.
Yes.
And so that's where that fear and everything comes in. And it's not that you can eliminate your fear, but but you don't want to be a slave to the fear. You want to actually, you know, be able to work through that fear.
Right.
So pulse watch, set it at 100,
okay.
And write out what you're feeling at that time when the pulse watch goes off, and then give that to Wendy to read. And Wendy, what I'd like you to do is write down, whenever he does that, write down 5 things you appreciate about him.
Okay.
And
okay.
I think that would be helpful if you could do that.
I can do that.
Good. Hi, Linda. We're glad to have you on the call. I don't know if you can speak or not because you're on the computer, but we're glad to have you here. Here's another one, specifics versus generality. Okay, one of you guys is breathing into your microphone, so be careful not to breathe into the microphone. Could you please explain why it's so important? Okay, computer only. Well, we're glad to have you, Linda. Is this my Linda in New Mexico? Or my Linda, New Mexico? This Linda from New Mexico? Yes or no? Okay, good. She has a Mac. That's why she's doing this. Could you please explain? Oh, if you have any questions, Linda, you can post them on chat too, by the way. Could you please explain why it's so important to hear specifics rather than generalities? You said that when the hurt spouse is asking questions, it's about, do I matter? Am I special? I think that's very true. I told my husband this. So now he tells me, you're special to me. I tried to explain to him that is a generic thing to say, that it helps if he's specific about in what ways I am special to him. He doesn't always get this. Well, I just told you you're special, but I need the why or the how. How do I make him make it understandable to him? There are times he wants me to tell him exactly what I want him to say. Needless to say, that's not very gratifying. Some spontaneity would be much better for me instead of feeling I have to beg him for the bone or something heartfelt. Yeah, that's not going to be very helpful. You know, I think, hi, Linda, now you're on the call, I can see.
Yep.
I think she can talk now, too. But one of the things that you're going to need to do, Denny, and this is just kind of good form, I would like you to write down 100 things I don't know about this. That's going to be really big. Are you pretty creative, Denny?
In what way?
Write down for me 25 things that you really appreciate about her. But you can't write down that she's special.
No.
But just try to get really specific about what are the things that kind of make your heart sing about her, why you feel like, you know, you're lucky to be married to her.
You can do that.
Yeah. And if you'll start kind of looking for those things, I think it'll make it much easier for you to get more specific with her as you kind of, I guess, pay her, you know, just you tell her what you think of her.
Right.
Does that help a little bit?
I think so. It might. Anything will help after yesterday.
Anything after yesterday, 25.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I think that maybe you're a little bit relationally retarded. Maybe
I already know that. Tell me something I don't know.
Well, I mean, I'm not. I think you've got a really great heart. It's just there's things to learn still. I'm not trying to be criticizing or anything. It's really great because you think about it. At your age, how much growth you've got in front of you that you can still do. I mean, it's like you're not at the end of the road. You're at the very beginning.
Yeah, that's what scares Wendy.
I understand.
She tells me she's preparing me for my next relationship.
I don't think I'm going to survive this one.
I get it. I know it's hard. Empathy. Can a person ever learn empathy if that's not a part of their makeup? Or does the hurt spouse just end up learning to cope with it or isn't there? You know, in research, there's actually a lot of controversy on this particular topic about whether or not someone can be taught empathy. I'm in the field that people very much can learn to love and can learn to express empathy and even learn to think like that. However, I think it's a long-term process. I think it takes, for people who've really tried to develop empathy, and I've had some guys that have worked really hard at learning to be empathetic, and they've spent 3, 4, 5 years working at it diligently and really get pretty good at changing how they see the world. But it's a little bit like dyslexia. The problem with a dyslexic, and I actually call empathy impairment, I think it's kind of a type of emotional dyslexia. With a dyslexic, when they see a B, they think it's a D, right? So with this is sort of an emotional dyslexia. Everybody else in the world kind of knows what empathy is, but they don't. So in the same way that a dyslexic has to learn whenever they see a B to kind of or a D to translate in their mind back to a D, the emotional dyslexic has to learn kind of when they see this to translate it around and to understand it as this. And eventually I think it actually goes to their heart. So it can be learned. Now, Linda just wrote, my husband says he can be empathetic but not feel sorry for that person. That confuses me. Let's see. Sorry, it's getting a drink.
It makes just me drink, too.
He makes you drink, too.
Is this Linda, Linda?
It is.
Hey, hi, this is Wendy.
Wendy.
I think just because, Linda, somebody feels empathy, I don't know that they necessarily have to feel sorry for that person. They can just understand how that other person really feels. But compassion, feeling sorry may be more of an issue of compassion. I think you might be able to understand but not feel sorry simply because my son, he texted me a few minutes ago, and he just got a ticket. And in the text, I'll read it here, he said, I just got a ticket. And then he has that frowny face that you can do in text, you know. And I wrote back, and I said, sorry. Now, the reality is, I'm not sorry. I have to confess that was a lie. I am empathetic. I really can't feel his pain, but I don't feel bad for him. He needed that ticket. So, well, I don't know how he got the ticket, but just I figure in a sense, it's probably a good lesson for him because he's having to learn to be more responsible with his car. I don't know if that helps any, but there's an example where I think I can have empathy for him, but I really don't feel sorry for him.
Well, that makes sense. I guess the word I was searching for was the compassion element.
Well,
like wanting, like as a hurt spouse wanting, you know, and he is a person who is learning what it means to be empathetic because that is not in his nature. So, you know, and he thinks, and he lives intellectually. So, anyway, this is sometimes, I mean, what he's saying, it is true, but sometimes I'm looking for more. You know, I mean,
right.
I guess it's the compassion element. So that,
right.
that's a good word to add into
this. Right. And, but, you know, and for everybody that listens to this call, her husband has been exemplary in terms of learning empathy. I remember he went through a period of time where he was so determined to learn, he carried this, you know, the feelings, faces on this sheet of paper. And when he'd lose his feelings sheet, he would panic and call me and ask for another feeling sheet so he would know how to feel.
Yeah.
So,
I can relate to that.
He was really determined to get that feeling thing down. And he's come a very, very long way. So I do know it's possible.
It is. It is.
Why is pretend normal so damaging to the recovery process? Well, let's see. The only thing I can say about that one is how do you spell denial? Or denial ain't just a river in Egypt. As long as somebody fails to accept who they are and what they are, I think they never move into recovery. I'm going to read something. If I can get it here without crashing my desk. Okay. This will take a couple of minutes, but it's worth having on tape. This is from the Big Book. Vinny, have you ever been in AA or anything like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so you know, and I'm going to be reading from Dr. Alcoholic Addict, which is one of my favorites.
That's my favorite one, too.
Yeah, I think he knocked it out of the park, don't you?
Yep.
Now, I've always wanted to meet him. I'm sure he's, you know, dead by now, but I appreciate so much. But for people who haven't read it, I'd like to just read this one. At last, acceptance proved to be the key to my problem. After I'd been around AA for 7 months, tapering off alcohol and pills, finding the program not working very well, I was finally able to say, "Hey, God, it is true that I, of all people, strange as it may seem, and even though I didn't give my permission, really, really am an addict of sorts. And that's okay with me. Now, what am I going to do about it?" And when I stopped living in the problem and began living in the answer, the problem went away. From that moment on, I haven't had a single compulsion to drink. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, it's because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be in that moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I couldn't stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I can't be happy. I need to change, I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. Shakespeare said, "All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players." He forgot to mention that I was the chief critic. I was always able to see the flaw in every person and every situation. And I was always glad to point it out because I knew that you wanted perfection just as I did. AA and acceptance have taught me that there's a bit of good in the worst of us and a bit of bad in the best of us. We are all children of God, and we each have a right to be here. When I complain about me or about you, I'm complaining about God's handiwork, and I'm saying that I know better than God. For years, I was sure that the worst thing that could happen would be that a nice guy like me would turn out to be, you know, an addict. Today, I find it's actually the best thing that ever happened to me, which proves I don't know what's good for me. And if I don't know what's good for me, then I don't know what's good or bad for you or anyone. So I'm better off if I don't give advice, don't figure I know what's best, and just accept life on life's terms as it is today, especially my own life. Before AA, I judged myself by my intentions while the world was judging me by my actions. AA has been the answer to my marital problems. It's as though AA has given me a new pair of glasses. Max and I have been married for 35 years. Prior to our marriage, she was a shy, scrawny adolescent, and I was able to see things in her others couldn't necessarily see. Things like beauty, charm, gaiety, a gift for being easy to talk to, a sense of humor, and many other fine qualities. It was as if I had, rather than a Midas touch which turned everything to gold, a magnifying mind that magnified whatever it focused on. Over the years, as I thought about Max, her good qualities grew and grew. And we married, and these qualities became more and more apparent to me, and we were happier and happier. But then as I drank more and more, the alcohol seemed to affect my vision. Instead of continuing to see what was good about my life, I began to see her defects. And the more I focused my mind on her defects, the more they grew and multiplied. Every defect I pointed out became greater and greater. Each time I told her she was nothing, she receded a bit more to nowhere. And the more I drank, the more she wilted. Then one day in AA, I was told that I had the lenses of my glasses backwards. The courage to change in the serenity prayer meant not that I should change my marriage, but rather I should change myself. I learned to accept my spouse as she was. AA has given me a new pair of glasses. I can again focus on her good qualities and watch them grow and grow. I can do the same thing with an AA meeting. The more I focus my mind on its deficits, late starts, long drunk logs, cigarette smoke, the worse the meeting becomes. But when I try to see what I can add to the meeting rather than what I can get out of it, and when I focus my mind on what's good about it rather than what's wrong with it, the meeting keeps getting better and better. When I focus on what's good today, I have a good day, and when I focus on what's bad, I have a bad day. If I focus on a problem, the problem increases. If I focus on the answer increases. Today, Max and I try to communicate what we feel rather than what we think. We used to argue about differing ideas, but we can't argue about our feelings. I can tell her she ought not think a certain way, but I certainly can't take away her right to feel however she feels. When we deal in feelings, we tend to come to know ourselves and each other much better. It hasn't been easy to work out this relationship with Max. On the contrary, the hardest place to work this program has been in my own home with my own children and finally with Max. It seems I should have learned to love my wife and family first and the newcomer to AA last, but it was the other way around. Eventually, I had to redo each one of those 12 steps, specifically with Max in mind. And the first saying, I'm powerless over alcohol and my home life is totally unmanageable by me, was the 12th, in which I tried to think to sit Kalanon and treat her with the love that I would give any AA newcomer. When I do that, we get along just fine. Perhaps the best thing of all for me to remember is that my serenity is inversely proportional to my expectations. The higher my expectations of Max and other people, the lower my serenity. I can watch my serenity level rise when I discard my expectations, but then my rights try to move in, and they too can force my serenity level down. I have to discard my rights as well as my expectations by asking myself, how important is it really? How important is it compared to my serenity, my emotional sobriety? And when I place more value on my serenity and sobriety than anything else, I can maintain them at a higher level, at least for the time being. Acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. I never just sit there doing nothing, waiting for Him to tell me what to do. Rather, I do whatever's in front of me to be done, and I leave the results up to Him. However, it turns out that is God's will for me. So I've got to keep my magic magnifying mind on my acceptance and off my expectations. For my serenity is directly proportional to my level of acceptance. When I remember this, I can see I never had it so good. Thank God for AA. And I just think, you know, he says it.
Thanks for reading that.
Isn't that great, Linda?
It is. It is. It's true.
That's it. It is very true. And, you know, when we can, I think, look at it like that, it makes a huge difference for us. Absolutely huge. So
I needed to hear that today.
You needed to hear that, Wendy?
I needed to hear it today. I did, yes.
You know, I think I could probably read that every day and need to hear it every day, actually.
Probably.
So let's do something. Since the call has been dwindling by, you know, when I ask people just ask questions, let's, the three of us are online here. What topics, because we could do a topic call. So if we were to do topic calls, what topics do you think we ought to cover on these calls?
Well, one of the things, of course, this is more like in 911. The thing that people seem to have a lot of questions about, but that are, they're kind of afraid to post them, I think, are things about sexual addiction, you know, and, but I mean, that's, you know, you
okay.
have people that are afraid to post, or, you know, you have spouses that are
afraid
to say anything, but then you also have the, you know, the person who is a sex addict has trouble. But, I mean, that's when, you know, like on phone calls and stuff like that, when that's what people usually, you know, jump on is in sexual addiction, because I think that's the
okay.
thing that's talked about the least.
No problem. We will make next week's topic sexual addiction. We'll give all the definitions and kind of why or what the treatment modality looks like. That's not hard for me to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Linda, can you think of a topic we ought to cover? Because we may alternate weeks and not just make it Q&A, but have topic discussions also.
Well, I think you've done a pretty good job on the calls, just touching on everything. I don't know. There's a lot of thinking. You know, I guess from the hurt spouse perspective, you know, when the other person is not moving forward or is not wanting to work on the marriage, you know, I guess, I don't know what the topic would be, but taking responsibility for your own recovery and healing. Regardless of what the other person chooses to do or not do or how engaged they choose to be. I don't know what topic that would be. But, and then also, I think there should be, you know, more, I guess it'd be nice, to, it's mostly women, you know, women love to talk. I guess something more geared toward the men once in a while? I don't know.
Yeah. In terms of when you say men, are you just talking unfaithful? Are males hurt? Or
both. Both. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't believe there's, except for, I don't know, is... I don't think I've ever heard the unfaithful spouse on one of these calls. I haven't listened to them all.
I'm here.
Oh, is this Dennis? Uh-huh. See, I save the calls, and I listen to them when I work out.
Yeah, we still...
That's what I do.
You know, those
I just happen to be home today.
They all look alike to me anyway, you know?
They all do look alike. We all look alike. They all look... It's the same song, second verse.
Oh, yeah.
So, maybe kind of the difference, it'd be kind of, well, this is just about as old as the differences between men and women. I don't know.
That's a good one.
We live in the big, great room, and they live in the house with a lot of little rooms. You know, about compartmentalization and, you know, how can someone do this and still love me? And just kind of the differences between men and women as related to infidelity in healing. I know there's a lot of that difference between men and women, but not necessarily how that plays itself out in the healing process.
Yeah. No, we can do that. And we are at the end of our time for the day.
Rick, can I say something really fast?
Yes, ma'am.
I think one of the things with the question and answer thing is it still shows up on the website as being on Thursdays for just general one. Yeah, and I think that may be part of the problem. I just noticed that this morning.
That will be fixed very shortly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
I can't believe you told me there, Wendy, because, I mean, the two of you are getting a lot of really good attention here, so.
Yeah.
Should have kept your mouth shut.
I know, but what the heck.
Yeah, well. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye.
Bye.